Welcome. I'm Steve Jones. Today, we look back at the life of Joe Paterno in his own words. For 32 years, I covered and worked around Joe Paterno, including 20 seasons on the Penn State Sports Network, the last 12 as the play-by-play announcer. What you're about to hear are interviews and press conferences that I saved over the years, as well as play-by-play of the greatest moments, courtesy of the Penn State Sports Network, a property of Learfield Sports. Joseph Vincent Paterno was born December 21st, 1926 in Brooklyn, New York. It was in that home and in that neighborhood that would end up playing a critical role in his thinking and philosophy as he moved through his life. His parents were strong believers in education. Thus, when it came time to go to high school, the choice was Brooklyn.
My dad wanted me to go to a Catholic school. So I didn't, and I wanted to play football. So my dad, who never owned a house, came up with $20 a month to send me to Brooklyn Preparatory School for Young Men, which is a Jesuit high school, because I wanted to play football. And then my brother came along, and when my brother came along, who was a much better athlete than I was, he had won a scholarship to St. Augustine's, same way, but he wanted to play football. So my dad made a deal with the Jesuits. All right, so for $300 a year, they get the both of us.
And they were outstanding together at Brooklyn Prep. Joe Paterno, they found the leader in him right away. Zeb Graham, who was an outstanding player in his own right at Akron, was Joe's high school coach at Brooklyn Prep. He was always impressed with Joe as a leader and installed him as his quarterback. And as his quarterback, he had to make decisions.
I get a kick out of everybody talking about spreads. When I was in high school, my high school coach, we never huddled. I was a shotgun quarterback. Never got on the center. Direct snap. Called every play in the line of scrimmage. You know, you see these kids here, and they're looking over in the sideline to get the play. I called every single play right there. And I never went in the huddle. And my high school coach, hey, I had two or three rules. Tackles inside the end, run off tackle. Tackles outside the end, trap. You got one safety, run the ball. You got two safeties, throw it down the middle. I mean, it was... You know, this game is not as complicated as people would like to think it is, because it isn't. So I go back in 1944. We were running shotgun.
And he was a shotgun quarterback indeed. But off the field, he was able to create a friendship with Father Thomas Birmingham, who had a tremendous influence on Joe Paterno in the literary classics.
Well, Father Birmingham was a whole different world for me. He saw something in me. He made me. We spent many an hour translating the Aeneid, but even beyond that, some other classics and things like that. But he was always there when I needed him.
When it was time to go to college, the choice was Brown. Joe Paterno was a quarterback and safety at Brown. In fact, to this day, he is the all-time leader in interceptions at the school and also in punt return yardage. His coach at Brown was Rip Engel. In 1950, Rip Engel accepted the head coaching job at Penn State. Engel would keep the staff that was on board at Penn State, was allowed to bring one coach with him. In the end, it was his quarterback, Joe Paterno.
I had absolutely no intention of coaching when I got out of Brown. But Rip Engel and I had never coached. And Rip Engel in the spring of 1950 got the job down here. And he really wanted a guy by the name of Bill Doolittle to come down and be his backfield coach, because they were going from single wing to the wing tee. And Bill decided to stay at Brown because he and Gus Atreides, who was the line coach, who was going to get the job at Brown, who was a Dartmouth graduate, were great buddies, and he decided to stay at Brown. So Rip was looking around for a guy to replace, not to replace, but to bring with him who could work with the offense. And came to me one day, and he said, "Would you like to coach?" I said, "Gee, coach, I've never even thought about coaching." He said, "Well, I'm looking for somebody to come down, et cetera, et cetera." He had asked me to, in those days, the Ivy League had spring practice. He had asked me to stay to work as an undergraduate to work with a kid by the name of Dave Carter, who was from Summit, up in the Hot Cove region, and work with him as a quarterback. And I did. And I guess Rip felt that I did a pretty good job, so he asked me to come on down. But Doolittle had the first shot at the job. And I came down. And in those days, and I would hope it would remain that way, Rip, he kept everybody. The only guy he brought was me. And when I got to be the head coach, the only guy I hired was Bob Phillips to replace me. And I think we've had a, you know, if you're loyal to this place, the place will be loyal to you kind of thing.
Well, Joe Paterno, of course, had his first job. He also had to go out and start recruiting.
We had a couple of kids up. We had a kid by the name of Don Iyer, who was from Chambersburg, Pennsylvania. Big kid, pretty good athlete. And Rip said, you take care of Don Iyer. I walked him around. And then Bob Higgins, who had been grandfather of the Suey kids and had been the head coach here for 30 years, Bob, I introduced Don Iyer to Bob Higgins, and Bob was working then at that time as a fundraiser and a kind of public relations guy. And he kept asking me questions about, what do you play, what do, that kind of stuff. And he went back to Rip, and he said to Rip, he said, we can get the little guy. I'm not sure we can get the big guy. That was Iyer. He had no idea who the heck I was or what. But I was the little guy, and I was the big guy. It was one of those things that happens in life that you can't put your finger on. I never intended to stay that long. I was going back to law school the first shot I had. Come to this hick town from Brooklyn. I went to school in Providence.
Well, at some point, he made the decision that he wanted to stay at Penn State. But that also brought with it an important phone call he had to tell his father.
Well, I enjoyed the coaching part of it. I knew he was going to like that. But, my dad had such a strong influence on me. He didn't see me being my being a coach. And I called him up and I told him I was going to coach, and he said, "Hey, you sure you know what you want to do?" He said, "I always thought you'd be president of the United States." That's a long cry from being an assistant coach at Penn State, and he had never been here. Most people thought it was Penn. It wasn't Penn State. I don't know. I like the people and get involved with the. The hard part about coaching, when sometimes you guys ask me about leaving and when I'm going to give it up, you get involved with certain kids. And you know that, just give me another 6 weeks with this one and give me another 6 weeks with that one. Give me another 2 weeks with this one and you can have some impact on their lives. And that was the other thing he said to me. Well, if you stay, have an impact. And so 1 year led to another. I think it was here 3-4 years when I called him up and told him, "Hey, Pop, I'm going to stay." And there was a quiet thing. He said, "You better talk to your mom."
Indeed, he had to talk to his mom. And when he did, she told him this.
My mom got on the phone and said, "You mean we made all those sacrifices for you to be a coach?" Because they had made a lot of sacrifices. Because my dad never made any money. My dad never owned a home. So when I decided to coach, they were disappointed. They were really disappointed. And that was tough for me. But I just had the feeling this was I had a feeling that I could do some things here. With Rip. I don't mean by myself. And with the other people, Jim O'Hara, Sarah Toretti, and the other guys, Frank Patrick, and the guys on the staff, I just felt that this might be something I could do, that I could grab hold of and run with.
Indeed, he did. And eventually, by the way, his mom came around.
My mom got kind of caught up in it. You know, she used to come up here and, you know, oh, you're Joe Paterno's mom, you know, and she loved that. That kind of thing. So I think she got over it. I don't think my dad ever really got over it, but, I think he always felt that after 5-6 years I was going to get out of it.
He didn't. He stayed at Penn State, as we all know. Now, along the way, not every Joe Paterno decision or comment was a great one. In fact, there was one point in 1959 where a decision was made to take Beaver Field, a 30,000-seat stadium, which was next to Rec Hall at the time, and move it from there to the east side of campus, where it currently sits. Rip Engel wanted Joe Paterno's opinion.
When I came here, we got 20,000 people in the game. It was great. And we were over on the other end of campus, and to show you how smart I am, when Eric Walker wanted to move this place over, and Rip Engel told the staff, I said, Rip, you got to fight him. You got to fight him. It'll ruin college. It'll ruin our football program. Come over here. That was 80,000 seats. I'll go.
Again, not every thought was a great one. It turned out that they knew what they were doing by moving the stadium to the east side of campus, which now has 108,000 seats. Coming up on Joe Paterno in his own words, Jim O'Hara gives him invaluable advice. He meets Sue and gets the job at Penn State. All that and more coming up, Joe Paterno in his own words on WKOK.
You just don't think about insurance. You buy a home, you take out a policy, and you forget about it until something happens and you need it. Then you think about insurance a lot. My agent recommended insurance from Selective. Insurance for our home and property, jewelry, even the food in our refrigerator. Selective thinks about everything, so I don't have to.
Selective. Response is everything. Get to know us at Selective.com.
Get to know your local Selective agent, Pretty Insurance, on Market Street in Sunbury or at PrettyInsurance.com. Find out what Pretty Insurance can do for you.
Welcome back to Joe Paterno in his own words. Today's show, as always, being brought to you by our good friends at Pretty Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury, and online at PrettyInsurance.com. And also, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. In our opening segment, Joe Paterno talked about his days growing up in Brooklyn, going to Brooklyn Prep, eventually going to Brown, and then what brought him to Penn State, and, of course, the conversation he had to have with his parents once he made the decision to not become a lawyer and become a football coach. Joe Paterno's career as an assistant coach was going along very well. Then he received some critical advice from somebody that he always respected, assistant coach Jim O'Hara.
I lived with Jim O'Hara 11 years. And I had my room, and the kids were growing up, and it was great. I had access to the refrigerator, and Betts with his wife would feed me, and all of it. Came to me one day, and he said, Joe, he said, you know, my father came over from Ireland. You can still see him, and he said, he came over from Ireland, and my cousins would come over. His father was a coal miner up in the Hardco region, up in the Scranton area. He said, my cousins would come over, and they'd need a place to stay, and my father would put them up, and they'd put Sean up for 3 months, and Jonathan for 3 months, and he'd say, after they had 3-4 months, he'd say, Sean, you've been with us long enough. Now go out and find yourself a lassie and get married. He said, Joe, you've been with us 11 years.
So, at that point, Joe Paterno moved out. He found himself an apartment on Bullsburg Pike. And eventually, he met a co-ed. The co-ed was named Susan Poland. They struck up a friendship at the library.
If I hadn't stayed here, I wouldn't have met Sue. I mean, nobody in the world has a better wife than I do. I mean, she's, I know institutions have had a better woman working for them. She raises money for the library. She's, as I said, she's cooked some of the guys. She's cooked, we've fed over 7,500 people. in my house after a game. And she cooked every one of those meals. No, nobody catered her. My girls, waited on people. My daughter-in-laws waited on people. My sons have set up tables over. I wouldn't have met her, and I wouldn't have had, I have five kids. They all went to Penn State. I've got about, you know, when you talk about trying to make it have an impact, I've tried to make Penn State the best place I could make it.
For Joe Paterno, as an assistant coach, he developed a great reputation. In fact, in 1964, Yale approached Joe Paterno about becoming their head football coach. He decided to turn it down. Then in 1965, Rip Engel made it official. He was going to step down at the end of the 65 season to become the head. At the end of 1965, he was going to step down as the head football coach at Penn State. Joe Paterno then was offered the job.
I got my job. Called me in after Rip said he was going to retire. Rip comes in and he says, I'm going to retire. I think they're going to hire you. He says, Ernie McCoy wants to talk to you. Ernie was the athletic director and dean of phys ed school. And he comes over to me and he says, do you want the job? I said, yeah, okay, it's yours. I said, what do I get paid? He said, $20,000. That's what I got paid, $20,000.
So what did he do with the $20,000? Well, he went out and started coaching football. His first of 409 wins would be against Maryland. Penn State used three safeties to beat the Terrapins that day. Lou Saban, who had been the head coach of the Buffalo Bills before that, was the head coach at Maryland. When the game was over, Joe ran across the field. He always wondered, what did the head coaches say after a win like this or a loss? He looked around. There was no Lou Saban. Lou Saban called him on Monday. He said, Joe, I want to apologize. I really want to apologize. He said, I know I should have run across the field, shook your hand, said something to you. He says, but you know what? We were both so lousy. I didn't really know what to tell you. Well, that was win number one. Joe Paterno's first season was 5-5, like Rip Engel's last season in 1965. Then Penn State's second season started with a loss to Navy. 11 games into his career, Joe Paterno had a 5-6 record as a head coach, and then he made a critical decision before a Friday night game in the Orange Bowl against Miami. He started a group of sophomores he personally recruited. They won that night. And would then trigger a streak eventually that would get to 31 straight games without a loss. Penn State would go on to win back-to-back Orange Bowls over Kansas and Missouri. Against Kansas, 12 men on the field by Kansas allowed the Nittany Lions to get a second crack at a two-point conversion that Bob Campbell scored on. Against Missouri, the Penn State defense had a phenomenal night with 7 interceptions and beat high-powered Missouri 10-3. Despite the great success, though, Joe Paterno was not offered a raise. He was still making that $20,000 a year. And then, out of nowhere, he got a call from Billy Sullivan and the New England Patriots.
You know, I never got a raise. I never wanted to get a raise. 1971, when the Patriots decided that they would like to get me to go up there, and I turned down $1 million deal and a part of the club. Right. Every year I was going to coach, I was going to get a certain percentage of the Patriots. And I turned it down. And then a guy by the name of Bob Patterson, who was the vice president in charge of business operations, called me up and says, we're going to Pittsburgh. We're going to see a guy by the name of Queenan, who was with Kirkpatrick, that big law firm out there that Thornberger was. I said, what are we going for? He said, we're going to put together a contract. I never had a contract. So we went out there, and Queenan had just negotiated Bradshaw's contract for him. And Queenan's a great guy. And we went in, and he and Patterson and I sat down, and he said, well, what do you want? I said, this isn't my idea. I didn't come out of here. Patterson wants to come out of here. They want to get me committed to something. He said, well, what are the parameters? I said, look, why don't you guys just talk? He said, well, go on, get lunch. And I said, okay. I went out, came back in about an hour, and he said, okay, we got a contract. I said, good, what do I sign? He said, no, you better have your lawyer look at it. I said, I don't need to have a lawyer look at it. I said, I don't have a lawyer.
He got the raise, and moved on from there. Eventually, his next major raise was when Jackie Sherrill ended up getting the Texas A&M job. Why? Because Texas A&M originally had offered that job to Bo Schembechler. Bo Schembechler turned it down. Steve Garvin at the time went to Joe, and he said, "Are we paying you enough money?" And Joe said, "Geez, I don't know." So Joe looked at him. He said, "Why don't you call Don Canham, the athletic director at Michigan?" He said, "Why don't you find out what Bo Schembechler's making at Michigan?" He says, "We're relatively close in terms of age and how long we've been there." He said, "I've been coaching here since 66. Bo's been at Michigan since 69. Well, it turned out to be a pretty wise move on Joe's part because they get a $25,000 year raise once they found out what Bo was making at Michigan. 1973 was a great year for Penn State. The Nittany Lions became the first team ever to go 12-0. But there was frustration. I think as every Penn State fan knows by now, the Nittany Lions went 1968 perfect and finished second, went through 1969 perfect and finished second. But the incredible frustration was what happened in 1973. 12-0. They didn't finish second. They finished fifth in the nation. Fifth. That was the year of the great Sugar Bowl game between Notre Dame and Alabama. Notre Dame eventually won it 24-23 with Tom Clements at quarterback. Notre Dame finished one, Alabama two. 12-0 Penn State finished number five. Penn State beat LSU that year in the Orange Bowl. But Penn State in 1973 did have a Heisman Trophy winner. And what happened after that was magical. It turned out to be that John Cappelletti gave a speech for the ages at the Waldorf Astoria when he dedicated the award to his dying brother, Joey.
I think a lot of people think that I go through a lot on Saturdays and during the week, as most athletes do. You get your bumps and bruises, and it's a terrific battle out there in the field. But it only for me, it's on Saturdays, and it's only in the fall. For Joseph, it's all year round, and it's a battle that's unending with him, and he puts up with much more than I'll ever put up, and I think that this trophy is more of his than his mine, because he's been a great inspiration to me.
It was a speech for the ages. No speech has ever been duplicated at the Waldorf Astoria than the one made by John Cappelletti that night. Joe Paterno was there and was mesmerized by it.
Never know what was going to happen. Yeah, John got up, and I knew he started to struggle. And Jerry Ford was the vice president at that time. And I went over and I put my arm around, just take, hang in there. There's only so much emotion you can show, and there's just so much that you can feel. And I don't know whether I could have felt any more. I really don't. I mean, the kid, he sat there, Joey sat there with his eyes open, didn't even know what was going on. And here's this great big guy, he's got tears coming down his eyes, and John starts talking. And all of a sudden, they realize what he's saying. You couldn't hear a pin drop in that room. I mean, absolutely. You'd have to be there, to understand. It was just an amazing, amazing event.
An amazing, amazing event. Today's show is being brought to you by our good friends at Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury, and online at purdyinsurance.com. And also Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia on Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Coming up, a crossroads for Joe Paterno, and then some championships. Joe Paterno, in his own words, will continue with more on WKOK after this.
Sunbury Motor Company, a tradition of trust since 1915. We have the largest selection of new and used Fords, Lincolns, Hyundais, and Kias anywhere. You want a new Ford? You got it. A 2012 Ford Fiesta four-door sedan, just $232 per month. And it gets 38 miles per gallon. And if you really want to save mileage money, come get a new 2012 Hyundai Veloster, three-door coupe with 40 miles per gallon on the highway for just $292 a month. Swing on over to Sunbury Motors Kia and try on a new 2012 Kia Forte four-door sedan for just $18,230.
And when it comes to used cars, well, just head over to sunburymotors.com and search our huge selection of pre-owned vehicles, where you can use our black book and take the guesswork out of trading in your old car. We give you easy access to the most up-to-date internet car buying tools. There's a reason we're number one. So come check us out today at Sunbury Motors Ford Lincoln Hyundai, located at 943 North 4th Street in the Auto Plaza, or Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, or go to sunburymotors.com.
Welcome back to Joe Paterno in His Own Words. I'm Steve Jones. Great to have you with us. Today's show being brought to you by our good friends at Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury, and online at purdyinsurance.com. And, of course, as always, by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Let's discuss where we've been so far. Joe Paterno, in the first half of our show, talked about his days at Brooklyn Prep and growing up in Brooklyn, then eventually moving on to Brown, the influence of Father Birmingham on his life and also on his career. Going to Penn State, it was a difficult decision for him to go to Penn State, and then the difficult phone call he had to make to his parents to tell him that you know what? I'm not going to be a lawyer. I think I'm going to be a football coach. And the silence on the other end of the phone. Eventually, by the way, Mom came around. Jim O'Hara giving him the valuable advice to eventually leave the O'Hara nest after 11 years. And once he got out there, he found a co-ed named Susan Poland. And then, of course, there were the successful seasons. The crossroads, of course, at Miami, where he finally broke through with some young sophomores, going unbeaten in 31 straight games. But the frustration for Penn State of finishing second in the nation in 1968 to Ohio State, finishing second in the nation to Texas in 1969, despite 11-0 records each year. And then the ultimate frustration in 1973, where Penn State became the first ever 12-0 team, and they didn't finish second or third or fourth. They finished fifth. 12-0, but fifth. But along the way, they had a Heisman Trophy winner in John Cappelletti, who gave a speech for the ages at the Waldorf Astoria. Through all the trials and tribulations of getting so close with great records, Joe Paterno advocated a national championship playoff. He finally got his shot, not at a playoff, but at a national championship game. He had it right there in his hands. Penn State went through the 1978 season with Chuck Fusini at quarterback, 11-0. Incredible talent the Nittany Lions had that year. Bruce Clark and Matt Millen were just juniors at the time. And Penn State had its shot as the number one ranked team in the country to play for the title. The Nittany Lions were able to get that shot when they beat North Carolina State 19-10. Matt Sui returned a punt 45 yards for a touchdown to put the game away. And then the crowd at Beaver Stadium heard the announcement. Oklahoma, which had been number one, lost to Nebraska. For the first time ever, the Nittany Lions were ranked number one in the country. Then they beat Pitt, and that set up the showdown with Alabama. Bear Bryant, of course, had always coached against Penn State, and had coached well. He had only lost one time, a Liberty Bowl game in 1959 when Rip Engel was the head coach. It was all set in 79 to win it all for the first time.
Well, I think the biggest loss, the game that affected me most was the 78 Sugar Bowl game when we played Alabama for the national championship, and they stopped us on the goal line. And then we stopped them, and we had 12 guys on the field when they punted. And I always felt that and we would have had the ball, and the kids shanked the ball. We would have had the ball inside the 30-yard line. With a chance to win the game. I always felt bad about that because we had never won a national championship up to 78. That team had lost one game prior to that. 77, we had lost to Kentucky in a regular season game, and we went down in 78, and we were undefeated and played Alabama in one of the greatest football games, defensive football games ever played. If I took the tapes out of the Alabama-Penn State game in 78 in the Sugar Bowl, you would have saw some of the greatest defensive players ever play the game. And it was a tremendous football game. But I deprived the kids of playing because we had 12 guys on the field. And the referees, the officials didn't know it. I knew it. And I'm yelling, get off the field, get off the field. And then all of a sudden the official sees me ranting and raving. He starts counting, 12 guys on the field, 15 yards, took us out of the ballgame. I think that was probably the biggest disappointment I ever had.
And the irony, of course, was that Penn State had beaten Kansas in the Orange Bowl when Kansas, on a two-point conversion, had 12 in the field. Because of the penalty, Bob Campbell then scored, and Penn State picked up the 15-14 win. 10 years later, it was flipped. It was Penn State with 12 in the field. And instead of the opportunity to beat Alabama and win the school's first-ever national title, they had lost. It put Joe Paterno at a professional crossroad.
Yeah, well, I almost quit. I went home and said, I'm going to resign. And then I went to New York, and I walked around Brooklyn. I went back to my parish, and I was all set to quit.
But he didn't. In the end, a big influence was Sue Paterno. In 1979, Penn State came back and went 8-4. They dubbed 1980 to be a very important season for Penn State, and then the Lions bounced back and had a fine year. They won 10 games, and they beat Ohio State in the Fiesta Bowl. In 81, the Nittany Lions were number one again, but injuries bogged them down late in the season, especially an injury to Kurt Warner. They lost at Miami on Halloween and then lost to Bear Bryant in Alabama. And then, of course, the Nittany Lions came into the 1982 season, and Joe Paterno changed everything up. A window of opportunity to open. Joe had been known for great defense and running the football. This time he opened up everything, and he put the ball into the hands of star quarterback Todd Blackledge, and they dubbed it Air Paterno. Penn State came out firing touchdown passes all over the lot, including a memorable victory over Nebraska at home 27-24, where the Nittany Lions in the final minute 18 rallied to win it. Down the stretch, Penn State picked up big wins after a loss to Alabama. Penn State won their final six games, including victories over Notre Dame and Pitt. And then it was the 1983 Sugar Bowl. Back to New Orleans, where the goal line stand had happened. Back to New Orleans, where there were 12 men on the field. But this time around, against the Bulldogs of Georgia, a memorable night for the Nittany Lions and Fran Fischer.
Blackledge is going to pass. He's throwing deep down the left corner. Gertie's there. Touchdown! 3-2-1. Penn State National Champions!
You're absolutely the greatest fans. It was unbelievable to come home from Harrisburg last night and see the hundreds and hundreds and thousands of people who lined a 90-mile parade. Kids in every town and fire engines and people who responded to the great job that these people did. And to see these many people, this group out there, 15,000 plus people out there who have come out to honor these guys and honor yourselves and honor a great institution, because when everything is said and done, we're number one, not only in football, we're number one in many, many things, because we are Penn State. We are Penn State. And you're Penn State. And God bless you. Thanks for coming out. And let's be number one, not only this year, but forever.
15,000 fans on the old main lawn listening to Joe Paterno on that January day after the Nittany Lions had won the national championship over Georgia 27-23. Joe then addressed the Board of Trustees. He told them that Penn State had everything in place to not only be just great in football, but great in every phase of the university. He backed it up by being a vice chairman of the largest fundraising campaign to date in Penn State's history. He personally has suggested that the university go after $250 million. That was staggering, because Penn State to that point had never received any more than $70 million in a single campaign. Because the number was so high, they decided to compromise. They settled on $200 million. When the campaign was over with, Penn State had raised $361 million, $111 million more than even the vice chairman, Joe Paterno, had asked for. Penn State in 1985 put together an outstanding season. They went to the Orange Bowl, where they played Oklahoma. Penn State jumped out to a 7-0 lead in the game. But then Oklahoma came back and beat the Nittany Lions. Then Penn State went to the 1986 season. Many felt that Miami was the best team in the country. The Nittany Lions went through the season with a 12-0 record. Miami, same thing. They went through the season undefeated. It was time for the showdown, a game that was so big that instead of playing it on January 1st in the Fiesta Bowl, they decided to move the game back one day, let it be a singular occasion on January 2nd in Tempe. Leading up to it, it was good cop versus bad cop. Penn State gets off the plane, jacket and tie, buttoned down, looking very professional for a college team, looking like they're arriving for a job interview, getting ready to work. We know that Miami arrived in fatigues. Then there was the infamous steak fry, where Jerome Brown got up and said, look, says the Japanese didn't break bread with the Americans before Pearl Harbor. John Bruno then got up, the Penn State punter. He looked over and he said, if I recall, eventually the Americans won the war. At that point, Miami stormed out of the room. But then it came time to play the game. Hard-hitting, physical. Penn State made big plays. They made Miami pay every time they went over the middle. John Schaefer scored on a touchdown run. Melvin Braxton scored for Miami. Eventually, though, the Canes led 10-7 late in the game. And then Shane Conlin picked off a pass and ran it back to the six-yard line. Two plays later, DJ Dozier was in the end zone, and Penn State had a 14-10 lead. Heisman Trophy winner Vinny Testaverde, who had suffered through a horrible night, suddenly put together a great drive in the waning 2 minutes of the game. He completed five consecutive passes to then set up the ultimate moment.
Back goes Testaverde, trying to win it. Throws into the end zone. It's intercepted again. Picked off by Pete Gustafopoulos. And Gustafopoulos has gift-wrapped the Penn State National Championship.
The national championship won by the Nittany Lions, the second for Penn State in five seasons. With it, of course, brought a trip to the White House for Penn State University's president, Dr. Bryce Jordan, Joe Paterno, and the Nittany Lion football team, and a meeting with President Ronald Reagan.
Now, before I finish, let me say a special congratulations to Coach Joe Paterno. In my money, I think he's one of the greatest coaches ever in college sports. He's never forgotten that first and foremost, he's a teacher who's preparing his students, not just for the season, but for life.
Mr. President, I want to say, as Dr. Jordan has said, how pleased we are and how proud that you would invite us here to the White House. And I want to present you with something that I think maybe signifies what Penn State athletics are all about. And this is a jersey that you can wear when you're out there chopping wood and driving the horse a little bit. Okay? And there's a couple of things about this jersey I want you to notice. Number one, as far as we're concerned, you're number one. Number two, there are no stripes on this jersey. We're not very flashy at Penn State. We don't put anybody's name on the back because we're team players. All right? And we're conservative.
Joe Paterno admitted later he was very nervous before he made that speech and pulled it off with complete and absolute ease. But then again, that was Joe Paterno. Through 1986, Penn State was as successful as anyone in college football. No question about that. Down the road, though, there would be changes for Penn State, including a move from independence to a conference. But also along the way, there would be incredible milestones that were reached in the 90s and also in the 2000s. Today's show is being brought to you by our good friends at Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury, and you can also go online to purdyinsurance.com. And, of course, it's also being brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Coming up, milestones for Joe Paterno, along with a trip to the Big Ten. All that and more when we continue with Joe in his own words after this on WKOK.
When you buy insurance, it's serious business. Because if something happens and you don't have the right coverage, you're out of luck and maybe out of business. So if you need insurance, business, home, auto, or flood, ask your agent about Selective. No gimmicks, just great coverage and great response.
Get to know your local Selective agent, Pretty Insurance, on Market Street in Sunbury or at prettyinsurance.com. Find out what Pretty Insurance can do for you.
Welcome back to Joe Paterno in His Own Words. I'm Steve Jones. Today's show being brought to you by our good friends at Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury, and online at purdyinsurance.com. And also by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. We've taken you through Joe Paterno growing up in Brooklyn, getting to Brooklyn Prep, getting to Brown, eventually the Penn State job, having to tell his parents he was going to be a coach and not a lawyer, leaving Jim O'Hara's secure nest after 11 years, meeting Susan Polin, marrying Susan Polin, and then eventually getting the job as the head football coach. The early years where there was a frustration of great seasons, but two number two finishes and a number five for undefeated teams. John Cappelletti's Heisman speech. But then finally, after the disappointing loss to Alabama, in which Joe Paterno admits he almost quit, he almost walked away after that 14-7 loss to the Tide, he came back to the job, threw himself into the job, and the Nittany Lions won national championships in 1982 and 1986. In 1988, Penn State suffered its first losing season. They went 5-6. Penn State then bounced back, had a good season in 1989, and then in 1990, beat then number one ranked Notre Dame. Eventually, Penn State had a number three finish in 1991 behind Washington and Miami. Those two schools, by the way, split the national championship that year. Penn State finished third. 1992 was a year of independence because Penn State had announced in 1989 they were going to the Big Ten. 1993 was the first season in the Big Ten. The Nittany Lions went 10-2. They lost to Michigan and Ohio State. And then came 1994. Penn State rolled through the conference schedule the way Sherman rolled through Atlanta. The Nittany Lions were undefeated. They went 11-0, and they went to the Rose Bowl. In the Rose Bowl, they took apart Oregon. Kerry Collins had a magical year, as did Kajana Carter, Kyle Brady, and the rest of the Nittany Lions. And for Joe Paterno, a milestone. Another decade, his fourth with an undefeated team. A conference championship, his first. Another 12-0 team. And on top of that, the first man to ever win every major bowl game. And thus, a special presentation of a game ball after the Rose Bowl from quarterback Kerry Collins.
Hey, stand up, Ray.
I got rid of all of you.
Let's go to the winningest bowl coach.
Get down.
No. The winningest bowl coach in the history of college football. He's won all four major bowls. He's been an inspiration to myself, to the rest of the team, and national championship coach this year.
These are the greatest guys I've ever been around. I just want you to know that.
It was a magical moment at the Rose Bowl that night. The rest of the 90s, Penn State played very well, a series of bowl victories along the way. But then there was the frustration of 1999 when Penn State started 9-0. They were number two in the country to only Florida State. And then they lost games to Minnesota, Michigan, and Michigan State. They ended up beating Texas A&M and finished with a 10-3 record. It was certainly frustrating for Penn State. And then in 2000, another losing season, just the second under Joe Paterno. But then in 2001, Joe Paterno stood side by side with Bear Bryant on the all-time victory list with 323 after Penn State had won a game at Northwestern, rallying to do so. And the moment was set for Joe to break the Bears' record.
5 seconds to the record. 3, 2, 1. Joe Paterno's done it. He's become the winningest coach in the history of Division I-A college football. His 324th career victory, surpassing the legendary Bear Bryant.
The one thing that keeps going through my mind is how many great moments I've had in coaching. And when every once in a while people say to me, you ought to get out of it. And I'm like everybody else, and every once in a while I think about it. And then I realize just how much it means to me and how many really absolutely great days I've had. I don't want to get out of it. And like days like today, I don't know whether, it's hard to measure something that happened 10 years ago, 5 years ago with today. I certainly wouldn't be anything that's topped this. This would have to be right there with everything that's happened to me.
So many times in the latter stages of Joe Paterno's career, some people felt the game had passed him by. I'll give you an example. In 1989, after an opening loss to Virginia, this was after the 5-6 '88 season, someone called the talk show and asked Joe in 1989 if he should get out of it because maybe the game had passed him by. Joe said he didn't think the man was right. And eventually, of course, they won in 1994. Ironically, in 1994, Joe Paterno was 68 years old. Some even wondered that year if, quote, the game had passed him by. Well, then from 2000 to 2004, Penn State had just one winning season. Once again, the question came up. For Joe Paterno, had the game passed him by? Some had wondered over and over if it had. Well, there was an infamous meeting at his home. Penn State University President Dr. Graham Spanier, along with several others, went to Joe's home and talked to him about the condition of the program.
I had a little pressure a couple of years ago, but we had a frank talk, and I felt at that time, and I told the people who were concerned about where we were going with our program, I said, look, if I can keep my staff together, we're going to be fine.
That was in 2004. In 2005, Penn State was more than just fine. The Nittany Lions were 1 second away from an undefeated season. They finished 11-1 that year. They won the Big Ten Championship, Joe's second. They went to the Orange Bowl and in triple overtime beat Bobby Bowden and Florida State 26-23. 2007 brought with it another incredible honor, induction into College Football's Hall of Fame. Joe Paterno told everyone at the Waldorf Astoria at that night exactly what the game meant to him and also what the game should mean to everybody else in the room.
We've been involved in the greatest game and the greatest experience anybody could be in. And some of you who are out there have used your football experience to bring up your families, take care of your businesses, to look back at great memories, great teammates, guys you could trust, guys you loved, guys you're going to war with tomorrow. We're so lucky.
Incredibly lucky indeed. For Joe Paterno, 2008 was also special. The Nittany Lions did it again. They ended up winning a Big Ten championship, and they ended up going to the Rose Bowl. This time they were beaten by USC. But still, it was another phenomenal season. Penn State had their third Big Ten title under Joe, and once again were very prominent in the national scene. And then for Joe Paterno, 2010 rolled around. After a victory over LSU in the Capital One Bowl to close out the 2009 season and an 11-2 mark, Penn State started out okay in 2010. But then the season began to build up, and as the season built up, eventually they worked their way to Northwestern. Joe Paterno had 399 wins under his belt. Down 21-0, the Nittany Lions came back in the greatest comeback under Joe Paterno, scoring 35 unanswered points to beat the Cats.
Joe Paterno is hoisted upon the shoulders of his players, and we have just witnessed history. You'll never see this again. One man, one school, 400 wins.
I want to thank the guys who have played for us, and I mean us, I mean Penn State, and all the coaches. People ask me why I stayed here so long. And you know what? Look around. Look around. I stayed here because I love you all.
And you could feel it in return that night in Beaver Stadium. 2011 Penn State season was humming along. There was only one loss to eventual national champion Alabama. In a late October game in Beaver Stadium against Illinois, a dramatic ending allowed Paterno to pass Grambling's Eddie Robinson as the all-time leader in Division I victories.
Here we go. Trying to tie the game. Hangs in the balance. Good snap. Put down. Kick by Dempke. He's on its way. The kick by Dempke is. It's the upright. No good. And Penn State wins the game. Unbelievable finish at Beaver Stadium. They'll never forget Joe Paterno's 409th, will they?
It really is something I'm very proud of, to be associated with Eddie Robinson. Some of you may not have heard me, but I've told people many, many times
two of the greatest people we've ever had in college football. But Jake Gaither, when Jake was the head coach at Florida A&M, and when Eddie was 24 years of age, Eddie became the head coach at Grambling. Those two men opened up the doors for the African-American kid. They had no place to go. The Southeastern Conference didn't take any black kids. There were very few playing up north. And Jake Gaither and Eddie Robinson went out and showed people what kind of athletes these kids could be.
Those will be Joe Paterno's final words in public. After that, we know what happened with the indictment of Jerry Sandusky. Joe eventually passed away January 22nd, 2012. Today's show has been brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury, and online at purdyinsurance.com. And also Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummelsworth. We hope you've enjoyed Joe Paterno's own words. I'm Steve Jones on WKOK.